last week I talked about death and dying as a transformative process towards liberation. And this week I decided to talk about joy as a risk towards liberation, so that there's balance, as well as you can see maybe how it makes sense in your life. Start with a story. Well, first of all, before I start with this story, I want to acknowledge International Women's Day, which is today, and I want to acknowledge all the ancestors and the female form that's come before us that have taken care of us and guided us to this place, and that maybe that we can then move forward and then take the lessons that we learned from our ancestors that have served us and teach the next generation and future generations. So although it's specifically acknowledging women's contributions, men had a part of it. But I want to acknowledge our significant contributions. Now along with that, now comes the story. Yesterday was the 50th anniversary of the walk in Selma. I was 11 years old. And when I was listening to the news yesterday, I had an opportunity to hear President Obama talk about the significance of what it meant. And there was a time where he said he had done that walk before, but this time he actually went down to Selma and there was a walk that was reenacted. And then around the country, people walked on bridges as a reflection to support this historical movement and transformative experience that still affects all of us to this day. Although I didn't experience some of what I saw on television in terms of the water hoses and the vehemency of the hatred, I still had some of that. Because even at 11, even though the schools had been integrated for since 1954, it was pretty tough times. So I know what it's like to be ridiculed and humiliated and spit on and told to go back where you came from and not in very kind ways. So when I was watching this yesterday, I was really moved and touched how powerful and important that time was, and the changes it made. And then listening to some of the young people and some elders saying, and some things still remain the same, both here in this country and around the world. And so here we have an example of extreme suffering. And yet through this suffering, there is liberation. And so part of me was quite moved. And I have a tendency to cry very easily. So I was crying. I was moved to tears, not just because of remembering a lot of the suffering, and there were many lives that were lost during that time, but also the joy of what is possible. One news commentator said that many people, at least in my community, never thought they would be an African-American president. Frankly, I'm quite surprised myself. I thought maybe there would be a woman before there would be an African-American person. So there have been quite a few changes in six decades. And yet still, suffering remains. So how do we hold the complexity of that? And since this is here and I'm here, it goes like this. Sharon Salzberg says, so much of our unhappy condition as living beings come from the constricting effort of our negativity toward each other. We limit ourselves and we limit others. We judge each other, compare ourselves to each other, demean and envy each other, and we ourselves suffer the strangling effects of these limitations. And Mark Nepo, who's written quite a few books, and he's a poet, and he survived cancer, has these daily, I don't know if you call them thoughts or whatever, he quotes from other people, and then he does a daily essay or something talking about his insight and understanding of something. So I was trying to find something around joy, and he says, the key to knowing joy is being easily pleased.
Real simple.
It can be simple. And when I came tonight, someone asked me if I needed any help, and I said no. And then when I got out the car, I just stood there for a minute and just looked around, and I noticed the cup of water seemed calm, and even though the sky has somewhat of an overcast, such a beautiful spring day. And I was thinking, wow, in this moment, everything is so beautiful. And then in my head went to everything else I have to do. But for that moment, it was pure joy. Each day of your life, you have many opportunities to develop a grateful heart by paying attention to the blessings, big and small, that are all around us. And even if things are uncomfortable or not as you might wish, it's still possible to find something you can be grateful for. And you can miss those blessings when your mind is contracted with stress or filled with negativity. And it happens to all of us. One minute we're in a moment of feeling happy, the next minute it's like, oh my God, and you think about what you have to do, or someone you have to talk to that have a difficult conversation with, or someone you get reprimanded by, and you're like, I'm too old for this. And then your judgments come in, and then you make it worse. This is all going on in your mind because nobody sees you, but this is what, you know, we all have something going on. But the moment you pause and let yourself notice something to be grateful for, even in the midst of a challenge, it's virtually impossible to continue to be lost in worrying about the future or regret about the past. So one Tibetan Lama says, and I've taken this excerpt from Awakening Joy, so that's what I'm reading from. One Tibetan Lama says, gratitude is like a satellite dish. Mm-hmm. When we feel grateful, our receptors are wide open to receive the abundance available to us. The very act of appreciating someone or something instantly calls forth joy. Or at least a smile. So I want you to try it right now for yourself. And I invite you to let your eyes close if you like. And think of someone or something that you're grateful for. It can be your pet, it can be your orchids, it can be your partner, it can be a nice warm sweater, it can be a hot cup of tea. And notice what happens. allow yourself to be with it as much as possible. Really get into the sensation of it. Even forget you're in the room for a moment and just be with it. You can have your eyes open or closed. Now I invite you to smile. And just notice that. Just notice what that feels like. And I'm going to take it a little further. Extend that feeling of gratitude to everyone in here. Appreciation for showing up. You could be doing a whole lot of other things right now, and this is where you choose to be. Among friends, around, among the Sangha, the like-minded people who committed to being awake and in your own ways committed to changing the world with yourself. So just notice what that's like. As much as you're able to. It is really, really impossible to feel genuinely grateful and not have a little rise of joy. And if your eyes are closed, I invite you to open them now. I love doing this exercise. I love doing this. And I have done it with so many different audiences. And people are just amazed, and they'll come up afterwards and just say, that was my favorite part. Thank you so much. That's how, I want to say, insidious joy is, or how effective. Something. I'm trying to think of a word, but I can't. So I'll describe it. You know, if you're quilting or sewing, I'm dating myself, or knitting or crocheting, you have to pay attention. And then the stitches connect. And when they connect, you end up making something. And I remember when I was a little person, my grandmother would go to classes at the high school, and she would knit. I think that's what saved us sometimes, because she could be to the other extreme. Mm-hmm. But when she would knit, everything was all right. It's like, oh, please knit. Let's go get you some yarn. And she made these really beautiful clothing. You know, it's just like, wow. So joy is like that. Each one of us is part of that yarn, and then together we manifest a sangha. So whether it's clothes, opening your heart, that what happens is there's a collective energy that the intention that we bring changes the energy in the room. So I want to relate this to the paramis, especially, I mean, there's 10 of them, but I'm going to focus on, I think, 6 of them. And I'm relating it to joy. And generosity is the first one. And it's believed to be common to all beings, which as parents or adults, we try to teach our young children or our nieces and nephews, please and thank you and sharing. And those are ways of instilling practice of generosity. So it begins there. And then we move into ethics or integrity or moral virtue. And all of us were raised with some form of morals based on what our parents taught us or the churches or the religion we were raised in. And then as we became adults, we sought other places for understanding. And at the core of many many religious practices moral ethics, which are a guide like the precepts or the Eightfold Path. And these are our what do you call it? I'm thinking, I just thought of way stations, you know, like, okay, stations of the cross, but not in such a heavy way, but just in the sense of reminding us about different places, how we can show up in our life. And frankly, I've actually always appreciated stations of the cross, even though symbolically it was about the death of Christ. It was also quite moving that there were these different places and these different experiences that happened to this person. Okay, that's enough of Catholicism. Then we move to wisdom. And wisdom, I think, is a core of how we hold our practice and that we cultivate over time. And as we get older, hopefully we mature. And with that maturity comes, excuse me, some more understanding of skillful means. I was going to say wise choices, but who knows what that means. But skillful means is something, I think, that's based on being able to pause. And that element and that aspect of pausing, there's a way we can cultivate wisdom. And that brings us into wise effort, the effort that we bring to everything we do. So even in the midst of a difficult experience, there can be a place of ease. Today, I taught at EBMC with some of my colleagues, and it was family day. And we had 40-something people there. And we had 20-something children. From, I know, 7 months to 11 years old. And we were talking about mindfulness of emotions, and one of the teachers was doing this explanation to the children. And he said, here's your emotions, and here's, here's mindfulness. And when they're together, no, here's being angry and reactivity. Just took me a moment. When they're together, there's no room for pausing. But when we open our fingers and we have a little space, we've taken a moment to have a pause. And in that moment to have a pause, we can shift. So even though we may still be dealing with some challenging emotions, that pause gives us information on maybe how to move to the next step, which has to do with wisdom and wise effort. And so we can, that pause can also be with joy. So in the midst of something really, really difficult, is there a way to pause? At this time in my life, I didn't think that, you know, certain comments could hurt so much. And last week, I gotten some feedback that kind of spun me out. I let it spun me out. And then I got to see how the judgmental mind takes hold and just has a field day. So by the end of the day, I was fit to be tired. I just thought I was the worst human being in existence. And that everything that was said was true. I was like, whoa, so this is what it's really like. I mean, I haven't been in that place in a long time where I let myself just get spun out by something. And then what I realized is that it wasn't just the moment of that experience. There had to be something underlining this that was causing me to be so critical. It was a mess. And I'm like, this is what it's like for some people all the time. And then I called a friend of mine, and she was very supportive and kind. So she was my space, because I was like this. It was all up in there. And then she was that space. And I knew even as I was going through it, it was just that moment. But it was hard. And it felt like it was going to last forever. And I just thought I was the worst person on earth. Oh my goodness. And then it passed. I was like, thank you. But the residual stuff, I kept, there was a part of me that just wanted to hold on to it. Like, okay, I'm going to believe this. Come on now. How long have I been around earth? How long have I been going through this? So I got to see this. I really got to be with it. And then I tried breathing into it and saying, oh, okay. So this is what's going on. And then I said, well, maybe I can have a little ease in this moment. And I noticed the sadness. I noticed the judgments. I noticed the stories. And I'm like, this is really, really hard. Then it started to shift. And in that shifting, there was some ease. And then I was able to step back and say, is there any aspect of what was shared with me truth? And what was going on for me? And then I got to hold it in a different way. And it helped me see, is this what I want to do right now? And is this a subtle way I'm acting out because I don't want to do it? You know how we do that, and don't want to own it. So I got to see that. Even in those difficulties, I found some ease. It's like, wow. So I'm getting a dose of my own medicine. But it was a great opportunity to really watch oneself, to see moment to moment how that changes. So, okay, the next one. In terms of paramis that I was going to talk about, was patience. I'll just talk about it. Patience is so key in understanding our efforts in the face of our suffering. I didn't have any patience. And I was forgetting everything I taught. I learned and what I teach. And yet, it was still there. In some way, it was holding me in spite of the fact that I was having a miserable time. So I appreciate, even when I'm not being patient, there's a way that this practice is, I got you. That's when we take refuge. I got you. You're going to be okay. And then, equanimity. Equanimity is so powerful in the practice of joy. Can we accept what is and not the way we want it to be? And I was not doing a good job with equanimity, being equanimous. I wasn't being equanimous. I was being really rigid and tight and everything. But it was a good lesson. And I really appreciate that. And I want to go back to something that happened this morning with the children. We were teaching them about what do you do with your emotions. And three children, one said, I go to my special place, I take four breaths, I pause. I was like, wow, these kids are really great. And then there was this little African-American girl, I don't think she was even five. She says, I have a tantrum. I cry. I don't like time out. And I want my way. And I just looked at her, and I was like, that's my girl. It was so precious that she just like, and her parents were there. And, you know, it's just sweet that this is what I do, you all. I don't care what anybody else does, this is what I do. It was so precious. So sometimes I want to have a tantrum. And I want someone to just make everything go away. And it doesn't happen. So in the midst of that, can I bring ease? And that ease is like a form of joy. And this is from Awakening Joy by James Baraz and Shoshana Alexander. And it was a poem that they paraphrased. And it said, be grateful for your life. every detail of it, and your face will come to shine like a sun, and everyone who sees it will be made glad and peaceful. Persist in gratitude, and you will slowly become one with the sun of love, and love will shine through you in all its healing day. And that was paraphrased by Jalal al-Din Rumi. She's wonderful, Rumi's wonderful. And it's from Andrew Harvey's Light Upon Light. So here we are, trying to be with joy. And sometimes many people have a much easier time than being with suffering and being miserable. And that joy is like a foreign dish that you don't want to try. Like my brother, I have five brothers, and this particular brother is a meat and potato person. And it's like, this is what I would like and nothing else. So I decided to. That's what I'm just a little bit. So I made this dish, and it was like he couldn't figure out the ingredients because he's got to know what it is and what the ingredients are. But he took a chance because he knows that I'm a good cook. I don't know what I made, but the point is he was quite happy and quite pleased. And I said, you know, this is not what you're used to. He said, I know, but you cooked it, so it's wonderful. And I was like, oh, that's so sweet. But he was being serious, because, you know, your family isn't always kind. Let's just say straight up. And they're just going to tell you, whether you want to know it or not, how they feel about it, something. Even when you don't ask. Especially when you don't ask. And you're like, did I ask for that? I was not interested. I didn't ask you for that. Well, I'm going to tell you anyway. Thank you very much. So even in that moment, there was some joy. And when there's been trauma in your life, not just in your personal life, but society puts trauma on us too, through some of the suffering that we have to go through in life that's not of our own making. It's hard to remember to have joy. Or if you know someone is going through a lot and you want to encourage them or you want to be supportive, you want to say kind words, but you kind of don't know what to say. And you don't want to make the situation worse. Sometimes it feels like unintentionally you're rubbing salt in a wound, and then it's like, oh my God, can I just take it back? Can I take it back? And then there are those, remember in the Peanuts cartoon, the little guy, I forgot his name, but he had the cloud, and everywhere he went, the cloud went. You kind of don't want to be around people like that, because it's just like, oh, here he goes. But what if that's all they knew? What if they didn't know it's possible to have something else? I remember one time, this is a little, I was thinking, do I want to tell the story, but okay, I'm going to be brave. I was somewhere, and I was talking, and we were talking about some difficult things, and I knew that there was a way that maybe I was unintentionally pushing people away. And this woman came over to me, and she said, you know, what if what people want to offer you is love? And I just kind of, it just took me aback, because I wasn't trying to push people away, but I recognized that sometimes when people get close and I don't know who they are, I kind of, my defenses go up. My safety, you call it my armor. And I'm just checking the landscape and trying not to, trying to figure things out. And so I think it had to be some heavy topic. And I felt a little vulnerable, you know. And she came over and she said that. And I just, of course, the tears came. And I was just like, wow. And I remembered to say thank you. Even if I didn't feel it, but there was a way that I felt like my grandmother was tapping on my shoulder and saying, you better, you know, you better say something. Because I will come up out of this grave and I'll be haunted even more. So, but it was a great lesson because how I was experiencing myself and seeing myself was not how it was being perceived. And so that response helped me open to their other ways of being seen and appreciated. But a lot of my life has been through the lens of trauma, so I've been very, very self-protective. So it helped ease a little the trauma, add to the healing, and open up to the possibilities of joy. And it is hard being joyful. At least I think so. Some people might, like, this is all I know. And I'm hoping it's not a delusion. I hope it's real. And then I'm very happy for you. Because then I'm like, may your life continue to be one of joy. And I keep practicing, may my life be one where I can practice joy and really feel it. And it's wonderful when you're with children because they just exude it. One minute they're, you know how they are. Mm-hmm. One minute they're crying, and next minute they're all over the place being so happy. And it's like, this is lovely. So they are our great role models for this and to be with joy moment to moment is a wonderful, wonderful practice. So what I'd like to do now, actually, before we do that, you know I'm going to read a poem, but first I want to read something else that Mark said. We work so hard to get somewhere, to realize a dream, to arrive at some destination, that we often forget that though some satisfaction may be waiting at the end of endurance and effort, there is great and irreplaceable aliveness in the steps along the way. And that is joy. So, of course, I'm going to read a poem, and then I'm going to ask you to do something together. Looking up, the evening sky rolls in on open arms, just as it's done for eons, like breath itself, like water that holds light, like a golden moment where we stop to breathe in to ourselves that sacred is here now. In such moments, all of life is seen. Our souls speak in a unifying and quiet tonal voice of the connections to all and the miraculous beauty of belonging to one another. Look up. The clouds just might meet your loving gaze. And that is joy. And that's by P. Gregory Gus. May we continue to explore and discover moments, moment to moment, preciousness of joy. Thank you. What I'd like you to do now is maybe turn to one or two people and hear your two questions. How do you experience joy? And what does it look like in your life? And then we'll come back together and we'll share. And we'll have about 10 minutes or so for this. So find three people or just turn around and only two people. I'd like you to come back to the group, the large group. that I dislike very much is when I have to interrupt people's conversations.
And this is like herding cats. And for you cat lovers, you know what I'm talking about. They don't pay you any money anyway. So anyway, I heard some lively discussions, laughter, and smiles. And I'm wondering if anyone wants to share either a question or a comment, what it was like, or what did you notice for yourself?
We have a few minutes.
Yes.
I've been making a practice for a couple of years now of trying to notice more of what joy feels like in the body.
Yeah. And what have you discovered?
It just makes it a lot stronger. It's almost like feedback with once I notice it in the body, that's delightful.
Yeah.
Right? So there's just more joy around that. And I found that it's something that can be cultivated.
Yes.
And gratitude is just such a wonderful way to kickstart
it. Yes, it is. And our body holds so many of our memories. Even when we were younger, another story, one of the same little African-American girl who was like five, she had her hair braided the same exact way I used to wear mine.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so funny because when I saw that, I said, that must be a universal style for little girls, little black girls, all over. And then we got into the conversation about it being three braids or two braids, and if the braid was in the front with the two in the back, or if you had them on the side. And it was the memory just triggered all these wonderful images of, oh my God, and the hair stuff. But it's universal. And I would see so many black girls with the hair. I've got pictures, so I know I'm telling the truth. And it was such a joy just in that moment to see her. And like, I used to wear my hair just like that. So thank you for that. Yes.
I was going to add on to what Bill said, that being in this practice allows me not only to notice when I'm joyful, but to spend a little time with it. Like you were saying about a beautiful sunset or a wonderful smell, that space.
Yeah.
To take the time with it.
Exactly.
So it's more than it would have been 5 years ago.
Yeah. Have people noticed that their, not tolerance, but their capacity to be in that place of ease has become not effortless yet, but more often?
Mm-hmm.
So that even something like noticing a butterfly, you can take a moment to appreciate it. Little things like that. Yes.
I think that was a commonality in our group, whether we use the word looking for that moment or cultivating that practice, but that consciousness of bringing it in, and I think also connecting with others in a mutually supportive way and looking for joy in nature
is
also, I think, common in our group.
Thank you, because one of the things we forget is how we're connected to the earth. And all we have to do is look around. And like the river's gonna go in its direction that it goes anyway. It's not gonna worry about if it's got a little extra weight or not. It just flows, you know? It's like, oh yeah, I can hold it like that. Yeah, yes.
One thing that seemed to be common for us was that gratitude is so often the catalyst for joy, and that we saw that it was creates this cycle of gratitude leading to generosity, leading to more gratitude, that it's just one begets the other.
I think the Buddha was onto something when he made generosity the first practice. Thank you. Yes.
I'm looking at it from a slightly different attitude. I sometimes feel surprised with joy.
Yes.
It's like my expectations, I'm not blocked by my expectations. I could suddenly see something unexpected and say, oh, you know, and that's a really lovely thing.
Yes, it is. I like those kind of surprises as well. Yes.
One of the things that I've learned in the practice is I can watch my mind start a story of fear or I guess fear is the right word. When I find myself really joyful, sometimes I think, well, this can't last, or I should do this more often. And so I've trained my mind to notice when I do that, I go, you're missing the moment, get back here. You know, I keep telling myself, nothing lasts, but here's one you want to just savor while you're here, so stop with all the stories. But it happens to me when I'm with my mother, because I enjoy her company. I enjoy her company, I'm glad she's well, but she's getting on in years, and I think every time I'm with her and having a good time, I think, this isn't going to last. And then I think, why are you going there? You're here now, savor it. You don't want to remember being afraid. You want to remember just having fun.
Yeah, it's so funny when you said that.
But the practice has helped me tremendously in being able to stay with the joy instead of spinning out into, why don't I do this more often? Or how can I make this last? Like, you can't. Just be here.
It's so hard to remember that. Who else forgets? Thank you. Thank you for that teaching. What else? Yes.
Well, one of my experiences of joy, which I find as I get older is easier, is just laughing.
Yes.
Laughing, for no known reason. You know, it just, sometimes I just find, not often, but sometimes I find myself just laughing for the sheer joy of laughing. And it's like, but in order to do that, I've noticed that I have to trust the situation at the time, that people won't think, oh, he's a flake or what. You know, there's a certain amount of trust that goes into being able to do that. But it's very joyful just to laugh.
I know sometimes I'll be reading something and then I'll laugh out loud and then I start to cry because I'm laughing so hard and just like, oh, God, here we go. People are looking. But it's so funny, and you want to tell them, but you can't, you have to put it in context, you have to tell the story, and it's like, I just want to laugh about it, you know. And this morning we played this game, what are you doing? So I might do one movement, and then Cody would ask me what I'm doing, and then the movement might not be what I'm doing. So I could be bouncing my hands like this. And then Kobe says, what are you doing? And I say, I'm brushing my teeth. And the children just loved this. And there was this little girl, and all she did was just laugh. And it was, and she would just fall out and think it was the most hilarious thing. And I just loved hearing her laugh. And it was infectious. It was just fun. Maybe two more. Yes.
I guess if I was going to have a motto or whatever, my husband and I have had to have discussions about this, is that I choose to be amused. And I think sometimes the problem is that situations come up and you can, and I know probably there's other options, but sometimes it looks like my only option is either to be annoyed or to be amused. And I choose to be amused. And we've had discussions about this. I said, honey, I'm not laughing at you. It's just the situation is just funny. I mean, I just remember one time when we were first dating, how we were all sweaty, we'd run our race, and we're going to go out to eat breakfast, and he locked the keys in his car, and he has a car that you can't not break into. And we just, I thought it was pretty funny. I said, well, let's go eat breakfast. Because the car's still locked. And we'll lock it after we eat.
Yeah, I remember when I was talking to my grandson. I mean, I was talking to my granddaughter and my grandson. You know how your grandchildren are being, or your children or somebody would be in the background, having a conversation but not on the phone with you? And I was like, whose voice is that? And it's like, it's my voice, Dana. I'm a man. And I just had to fall out. I couldn't even put the words together to make sense. I'm like, and when did this happen? I just had to laugh. He says, well, I am a man. I was like, okay, I'm going to let your mother deal with you. So it's fun. It's fun. So thank you for your sharing. Thank you for the joy. Thank you for the laughter. My heart feels lighter, and I hope yours does too. So now I think we're going to move to reading of the metta cards.
From Letitia, who was providing care for her father on hospice. For Tori, undergoing treatment for acute leukemia. And for Anne, struggling to stay alive after a massive stroke. For all families and soldiers in war-torn countries. For Rita, adjusting to her new living situation, and her children, who are hoping the best for her. For all those who are today, Women's Day, missing their mothers. For Marissa and Savannah, both teenagers, struggling with depression and anxiety.
So I'd like us to take a moment and think of someone or a group of people or anyone you'd like to extend metta to, as well as yourself. And I offer these phrases. May all beings be protected from inner and outer harm. May all beings love and be loved. May all beings live with ease and well-being. And may all beings be free from suffering and its causes and conditions. Just for a moment, let that settle. Sending it to whomever you want to, including yourself. And may all beings experience joy. To the end of our evening, and the dedication of Mary is such a personal and wonderful practice. So I'm going to invite people who choose to offer Mary, and I'll begin. And if you want to say something, just stand up so that people can hear you, and then in a couple of minutes we'll end with the bell. So, I offer the merit of practicing and cultivating joy to all beings in all directions, without exception. Anyone?
May you share a merit with Ruth Denison?
Yes.
Who recently passed.
I dedicate any merit to all beings raised and confined and killed for our food.
I offer the merit to everyone here. May you experience joy moment to moment. Thank you.
Sadhu.
I so love that.